government is looking at us.
Sure. Well, for sure we're at the Waldorf Astoria, but no, I'm sorry, we're not. We're at the Grand Hyatt. Seriously, you know, I think it's symbolic that a lot of us are speaking about the relationship between the current situation and the Enron scandal and the corporate fraud scandals. For those of you who don't know, I was one of the original prosecutors on Enron, and John Ray, of course, ably assisted by Bill McSherry and others, has been left to sort out the mess left behind by a lot of the folks who went to jail as a result of those prosecutions. But in many ways, this is very different. The order of magnitude is completely different. And whenever you have a crisis of this nature, of this scope, there's always an enormous amount of pressure politically to find scapegoats and to hold people accountable. I heard someone just before the election predicting, not exactly a long shot prediction, that Obama was going to win because too many people live in an area with the same zip code, which is 401k, all right? And there's a lot of truth to that, but when those types of events come together all at once, you can literally hear the sounds of the gallows being built down on the mall in Washington and on Wall Street here in New York. So the real question today is who's looking and what are they looking at? Let me start with the Department of Justice. We know from published reports that they're looking at short sellers. That was alluded to earlier, that there's an allegation or a series of allegations out there that short sellers have colluded in some way to drive up the, or to manipulate credit default swaps in order to drive down the price of certain financial institutions that bought that protection. The theory there is that they were shorting the banks and manipulating the CDS market, and therefore driving down the bank's stock price and profiting as a result. There are a lot of hurdles to that sort of prosecution, but I think that at the end of the day, if the prosecutors are able to show that there's intentional misreporting, fraudulent misreporting of prices for the CDSs, then I think that they're going to have a pretty good shot. I think they're a long way away from that. I also think there's going to be a lull as we have a transition from one administration to another in terms of actual activity. There's always a risk, though, when you have very broad fraud statutes out there, that a lot of activity that might otherwise be non-events will become sort of criminalized because of, you know, a few bad emails here and there, and perhaps a model that didn't work quite as well as people thought it did in an email internally that suggests that the model doesn't work. So, you know, that's one area. The New York Attorney General is out there, obviously, as well. They have a very broad Martin Act statute. It pretty much prohibits any manner of fraud, and it's been interpreted very broadly. Again, the risk is not knowing exactly the extent of the evidence that's out there about what sort of fraud could be committed. Ironically, as I said already, years after Enron and the numerous very bad emails that came out as a result of that case, you still see people being very irresponsible and saying things out of context on email and on instant messaging and on voicemail, which are now captured digitally for over a year in many places. And that results in prosecutions and in regulatory enforcement activity. I want to talk a little bit about the Securities and Exchange Commission as well, because they've obviously sort of put themselves front and center during this crisis. I think in September, they had a major announcement that, you know, they'd be going after hedge fund managers and broker dealers and institutional investors who had any sort of significant trading activity in credit default swaps, and that they'd be using their Section 21A powers, which effectively force regulated parties to respond to these massive inquiries. And we heard, you know, Linda Thompson, who's the director of enforcement, basically say that she's going to root out, expose, and subject the guilty parties to the full force of the law. Well, you know, I was at the SEC once, and I remember that there was a presumption of innocence at that time. It seems to me right now we're in an environment where there's a presumption of guilt. The government has effectively shifted the burden onto market participants to prove their innocence by taking this sort of approach. And that's long before anyone's really been accused of wrongdoing. I'm not saying everyone out there is completely innocent. We've seen some indictments come down so far and some insider information with respect to Bear Stearns, and we may see more activity of that nature. But I also think that there tends to be a little bit of an overreaction when a crisis hits and, you know, people are asked to basically come up with some sort of an explanation to hold some people accountable. With respect to publicly traded companies, I think their biggest risk is probably whether or not their financial statements were inaccurate because they knew that the value of these assets was different than what they reported. We've talked some about the rating agencies. I'm not so sure that we're going to find criminal conduct there. It seems more on the order of conflict of interest type problems that are at least being alleged right now. You know, obviously the rating agencies are being paid by underwriters and issuers in some situations to provide these ratings, and there are allegations out there about rating shopping. The SEC just last week issued some proposed new rules that are supposedly going to cover, you know, every aspect of the way they do business, including disclosure about methodologies, disclosure of their track records, sharing information from issuers between the rating agencies so that they can sort of serve as a check and balance on each other, giving more disclosure about ratings that are related to collateralized mortgage obligations and collateralized debt obligations. I think what it tells us already, though, is that the SEC at least has formed a view that there were conflicts of interest with the rating agencies, and therefore these new rules are being proposed to address that. And I also, you know, as a Washingtonian now, originally a New Yorker, I want to stress that there's another entity out there called Congress, which has already had some hearings. We know now that the ever quiet and subtle now Chairman Waxman of the House Banking Committee has, you know, already publicized a bunch of emails and had hearings with the rating agencies. And, you know, when people come out with internal conversations talking about how things could be structured by cows and they'd still rate it, that doesn't help one's cause when one is seeking to have less regulation. So if one, you know, takes into consideration the activity that's going on in Congress, the activity that's been publicly announced by the SEC, what we happen to know, you know, through news reports and our own relationships that the Department of Justice and the New York Attorney General are looking at, then I think that ultimately there's going to be a lot of activity. Even if there are no findings of criminal conduct or even SEC violations, the amount of time and effort that will be spent responding just to the investigations will be enormous. And so I think it's something that everyone should be cognizant of and aware of, particularly when sitting down and writing emails between each other and leaving voicemails about how things are going.
We're running pretty late today. We try to allow some time for the third panel, which is going to tell us where we're going from here. If anybody has any questions, now's the time to ask. I'd appreciate it if people would not take a break, or if you do, make it short so the third panel can get going.